In the heart of the state of the art, at the dawn of the next stage in entertainment, you found No Proscenium.
You have indeed found No Proscenium, the voice of everything immersive. I'm your host, Noah Nelson, and welcome to episode 433 of our ongoing exploration of the immersive cosmos. This week, it's an After Dark style episode featuring myself and No Pro Arts editor Laura Hess as we have a conversation that covers the AI works in the LA Art Show, the use of AI in immersive, a bit on the Wonka debacle, because we recorded this like 3 weeks ago, and the overall nature of immersive work, particularly as it applies to the art world, and little tangents and rants here all over the place. Be forewarned, there's cursing in this one, which, if memory serves, is all my fault. I hope I remember to turn on the explicit tab. Tipper Gore will be so mad at me if I don't. Hey, do you love random 90s references in immersive? You do? Are you already a no-pro backer? Well, great. Wait, you're not? But Okay, look. 8 more backers join up, and I'll stop shilling on the podcast for the Patreon for a whole month. Hey, huh? That's right. A whole month without me doing this part once we hit 450 backers. A little present to you, a little present to me. This week, Paul Malmont and Jill Bork have pledged their support and gotten us 2 steps closer to that blissfully quiet month. If you're not a backer yet, head over to www.patreon.com/noproscenium and join up. Get access to the newsletter and our Discord, and rest assured in the knowledge that you found a way to shut me up. As always, big thanks to our sustaining backers, Samuel Mostry, Chris Woolman, Samantha Davison, Eric Shamlin, Elaine, Daryl, John Boulette, Cameo Wood, Jay Bushman, Jerome Joseph Gentes, Kurt Collins, Ryan, David Basick, Richard Ayers, Lonnie Hands-On, Lecker LeCool, The Ministry of Peculiarities, and Jan Budman. And hey, if you want to support us in a bigger way, and or if you just don't want to do it with money but want to get people in the door, or you have something special you can give to our existing backers, hit me up at noah@noproscenium.com, and we'll work out some details. We've done that a lot of late, and I've been quite happy with the results. All right, now on to this episode, and then I'll be back to say goodbye at the very end very quickly. Now is No Pro's arts editor Laura Hess. Laura's been itching to talk about AI in immersive and how it relates to immersive for some time now. And when the not Willy Wonka thing happened in Glasgow, was like, oh, this is a good peg for us to talk about it. Because, you know, everyone's favorite catagating, they're not actually Oompa Loompa events that made international headlines. And I was like, sure, let's do it. Let's have the AI talk now. So Laura, welcome back on the show.
Hi. Yeah, actually we had first started talking about this conversation even a little bit further back.
Oh, way further back.
pre-Willy Wonka, pre-Glasgow Willy Wonka debacle. But this was the LA Art Show this year. A big kind of impetus around us having this conversation, because it was centered around, it wasn't just AI, it was the theme this year was around kind of memory and humanity and AI, and sort of then different artists' takes on that. And I went and I was like, this is, I think, if anything, an unintentional, optimistic take on AI, because the utilization of AI in that capacity for those installations for that show at that time did not deliver. And and I remember I was messaging you from the show and saying, yeah, this is unintentionally optimistic. which was a really interesting thing to see.
What do you mean by unintentional? Like, do you mean like their marketing of it being AI, like they were being too optimistic because the pieces were kind of flat? Or what do you mean by that unintentionally optimistic?
Yeah, it just did not land. None of these pieces really worked. They weren't, so there's a number of things, and I can get into specific installations depending upon how deep a dive we want to do. But these were things where either it didn't, how do I phrase this? Like, just knowing that AI was used for a particular installation, it made no difference. It really looked like there's one example that I'm thinking of where it could have been made at, it was sort of an abstract film. And what it was supposed to represent, it just didn't deliver. It didn't matter that it was generated in AI. It could have just been an abstract presentation. And so the very fact that AI was a part of this didn't actually make a difference to me. I'm actually talking about, let's see, it's called Threaded Tracing. The artist is named Chris Coleman. And I mean, it sounds interesting on paper. He made visits to forests and airports across the US. And so there's kind of this abstract representation. It's difficult to describe, but it's these abstract images on, it's a video animation that you're watching, and it does sort of look like you're moving through space, but it's completely abstract. And so I don't really understand, just as I'm standing in front of the video, as I'm standing in front of this projection, they're interesting visuals, but there's nothing in particular around how AI used this information that lands in a way where I think that was super additive. Like, now I can see how that really enhanced the messaging around this, how this really conveyed what this artist is trying to say on a whole new level. There was another one that had a word cloud and had AI generated images. It actually felt, I don't mean to be derogatory, but it felt really rudimentary. It felt like we're playing around with a tool. And I think that's actually what the sort of optimistic, the unintentionally optimistic take is because I think there's a lot of real concerns. There's ethical concerns, absolutely. But I think, in my opinion, this was really a display of, this is a tool. And if you don't really know how to use it, or you don't really think of how does this offer something else, like I'll take one step back. Like, one thing we talked about so much in early pandemic was different productions leveraging these mediums and these platforms and really understanding how to do that.
Yeah, playing with the affordances, like really, really trying to get at what was special about this and how to overcome being stuck in these flat surfaces to create some real connection, to create some depth. Even though all we have are flat screens in front of us.
Right. I mean, whether it was analog stuff like telephones, you know, I love my phone-based shows. Mm-hmm. I'm still rooting for all of those. Whether it was over Zoom, whether it was things like early pandemic, like Arcana, and the way that team leveraged Instagram, really understanding, okay, how does this platform, how does this best deliver the story? And I mean, really, you know, taking the story first and then realizing like, yes, Instagram is the right way. And then we also continue to tailor it to that particular platform, that particular medium. And it was just, fascinating to be at this show. And I think, of course, anytime there's emerging tech, we have to allow for time to play around and explore and stumble and make mistakes, 100%. But I think what was so interesting was that one of the, in this case, the title of the project was called Be Water. And on the LA Art Show, and this, I should have prefaced all of this by saying these particular installations that I'm referring to, these are all part of the Diverse Art LA section of the LA Art Show, which is a massive art show, more traditional kind of art fair. And Diverse Art LA is the only experiential section of the art fair. It's also the only non-commercial section of the fair. So it started in 2015. It's a much newer part of the LA Art Show. And it is really interesting to go and to see. There have been some dynamic pieces in the past. And there's one I'll refer to that actually incorporated AI, I think, better than any of this year's. But this one project called Be Water on the LA Art Show website in the Diverse Art LA section, there's a rendering of this, you know, what this installation was supposed to be like. And it reminds me of this Willy Wonka issue because in person, it looked nothing like that. And there's this particular artist, they sort of have this of this Be Water project, they have different iterations on their site. So different options, different ways that this could be realized in physical space. So there are multiple images. This isn't the only one. But LA Art Show took this image and put it on the website. And I completely recognize that there are times where you have to put, for ticket sales, for promotion, you have to put up some imagery. And again, understanding those limitations and the way that these things are driven, but it just kind of weirdly embodies this issue because I show up, I go to the installation, and it looks nothing like that rendering that's on the website.
Yeah, like it's one thing to be putting up concept art that someone labored over, and you know, you can tell whether it's sketches or it's someone did something in CAD, and it's quite something else for someone to have like, well, I spent a couple hours like getting the prompt right in Midjourney,
right?
And like, that's great, man. My, you know, there's a reason why we don't talk about NFTs, about AI a lot here on NoPro. It's just because I'm so deeply skeptical of it and so goddamn exhausted of how much oxygen this stuff eats up and gets people looking at this stuff, looking at the potential of this stuff. And there's a massive amount of potential here. That's why Silicon Valley's investor class is convinced Wall Street's investor class to like dump a bunch of speculative money into it. But there's something to me fundamentally missing in the work that gets generated in AI when it's presented as, look what I made, which is different, I want to hold, than, hey, we're going to use these tools to do some procedurally generated augmentation of our imaginations, right? Like, the difference between something like a person generating out, you know, video with one of these, you know, hallucinating machines. I so deliberately do not pay attention to this space that I can't remember the name of the thing that everyone was agog about like 2 weeks ago with, you know, with the video thing. It's like, oh, the new video from such and such. I can't remember if it was like OpenAI or Microsoft or they're related or like, I do not give a flying fuck is basically what it comes down to. Like, because it is all to me inherently masturbatory. And I'm going to say, like, there I am using all the cursy words here on and the grotesque imagery, because if you think about what everyone's really chasing with this in a real way, it is the holodeck. I walk onto the holodeck and I say, computer, give me a Robin Hood simulation, right? No, I want it greener. Make it night. Ah, yes. Give me merry men. No, make them animals, right? You know, and the computer just keeps on doing that. That's what we're chasing. And that's wonderful. And that's great. And that's exciting, particularly when you have, you know, dilithium crystals and matter, antimatter, you can make as much energy as you want, right? Go for it, right? The fantasy of the holodeck has been something we've been chasing since someone said holodeck in a pitch room with Gene Roddenberry, like, you know, 40 years ago, right? And that's where this stuff may lead. But there's a big difference between I'm going to entertain a group of my friends with our Robin Hood furry, computer installation, video game that I'm making for everybody to LARP in, right? Because we love the Disney cartoon that much. There's a big difference between that and I'm gonna make the next big Hollywood blockbuster Robin Hood furry movie, right? Like, which is what everyone thinks they're doing right now, that this is where that is leading to. And I just do not see any of this stuff is as interesting to people to passively consume stories hallucinated by machines with some guidance from people who are frustrated artists, frustrated writers, or who are just, you know, too lazy to go through the discipline of working through all that, or who feel like they've hit their absolute limit in terms of their skill and want something to push through because they're trying to get the thing that's in their head out in front of everybody else. When you look at what an AI produces, at best, it's a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
A funhouse mirror of your subconscious. You glossolalia'd at a machine and it glossolalia back at, right? That's speaking in tongues for those who don't know weird words like my vocabulary, right? You spoke in tongues to a computer and the computer hallucinated based on the speaking in tongues you did. And mm-hmm. Look at it and you go, wow, this is awesome. I mean, hell. When Midjourney first hit, I messed around in the Discord with it. I was a little curious. And I was obsessed with the idea of trying to create an image of Donald Trump destroying New York City as a Shin Godzilla-style sized creature, right? Like in the style of Shin Godzilla and it being photorealistic. And that's what I was trying to get the machine to do because that was the weird image that had popped into my head. And you know, it kind of got there a little bit, right? Like it was doing some stuff and I was like, oh, this is kind of compelling. And then I was trying to get it to do something else. And somehow at one point wound up because it put something forth that I was like, well, that's weird. That's almost if it was like Goku as Jesus. And so then I just put Goku as Jesus. And I'm not even a Dragon Ball Z guy. I just thought that was funny. And it gave me like religious iconography based on Dragon Ball Z. And like, I'm like, oh, this is humorous. And I did like show it on my Twitter back when it was still Twitter for like 5 seconds. I was like, oh, look at this. This is interesting. And then like, I mostly lost interest and I saw some people trying to make some sincere efforts to like use it as a collaborator. And that was interesting academically.
Wait, sorry, as a collaborator, like, again, to just sort of for like concept art or just to sort of play around with ideas that they...
I saw some people making comic books.
Okay.
Or trying to make sequential art by like they wrote something, they fed it into, and it managed to like, you know, produce some stuff. What was scary, of course, was like sometimes some of what it was doing was so close to other artists' styles. And that was that era when everyone started getting really, really antsy about it. But even then, I didn't feel compelled to read the material. I didn't feel compelled to like go into it. And I knew some people were really happy, right? They were really happy that they made the thing. They feel like they had made something, right? You know, like they got to see their vision come to life,
right?
In a way that they never would have gotten to otherwise, or would have cost them a lot of money to. And for them, for that act of seeing it reflected back, I'm very happy for them. I am not interested, as someone who loves comics, I'm not interested in seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see an artist's interpretation of a writer's words, or mm-hmm. I want to see a writer artist. For me, this stuff, if it's going to be marketed as a means of communicate, if it's going to be marketed as a product in and of itself and not as a platform to play within, right? Then I'm just not, I'm, I, no. because for me, an artifact of art, be it a comic book, a film, or whatnot, that is a means of communication. That is one human soul trying to talk to another human soul, or even better, it is a 1,000, 5,000 human souls collaborating together to try and pull a vision out of the ether and feed it towards us. That doesn't mean that some of these tool sets aren't fantastic for assisting those artists. There are whole video games that would not exist without procedurally generated material, right? Procedurally generated is exactly what these large language models are doing. They're generating material through procedures. These algorithms making stuff out of commands and a data set. So is true for No Man's Sky. So is true for a bunch of procedurally generated things. Things like, you know, there's a couple of Caves of Cud, right? Is an indie video game that's, I think, even largely text-based. All of that, right? All of that is true. It's the same general idea, but those are also, there's artists who are working on very specific implementations of these tools in order for someone to go have a video game ephemeral adventure. Ah, that's what it is. These are ephemeral things. And I think a lot of people are trying to treat it as like solid and icons. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think what's interesting too is, like, again, just back through the lens of the LA Art Show, this one piece, let me actually, I feel like I need to pull up the name. Would be much better if I did that. The one that I was referring to that has this, so the name of it was Bridging Emotional and Digital Landscapes. This is the one that had the word cloud. And the way that it worked was there was an iPad and participants could walk up. They could enter in, I think, just a phrase. Maybe it was actually just a single word or a couple of words. But it was a couple of words or phrases they could put in that resonated with them somehow. It spoke back to a memory, maybe the emotion that they were feeling that day or on a wonderful day. And then those words were projected on one wall into this word cloud. And on the other wall, then an AI generated image would be projected that was created from their prompt. So just that right. The phrase. And then they could get a printout of that image. But it was like, we talk a lot about intentionality, and rightfully so. And again, these are tools and we should have a chance to play around with them. But they're, to me, I was like, I don't really understand what is the deeper story here. It really didn't feel like there was anything to me. I mean, there's a lot of text, both online and certainly on the wall at the show itself, lots of text about, you know, what this means, but the actual action of going through it, I mean, it really felt like this, to me, it felt like this empty exercise. I didn't feel rooted or grounded in anything. I didn't feel connected to the artist. I didn't feel connected to my fellow participants. I didn't really feel connected even to what I was doing. It just felt like with the focus being on AI and with AI being a tool, none of these really, in my opinion, had a compelling story. And whether that's more abstract, there was one that was about sea change and rising waters. You know, that's a very real problem. It's a very compelling problem. So whether it's something like that, whether it's something that is more personal, my own memories and certain emotions, but I just didn't feel connected to anything because the tool was leveraged or was centered. Story wasn't really centered at all.
Well, I mean, I think, and I'm someone who, you know, I don't need everything to have a story, but I need it to have meaning, right?
Like, right. That's a better way to put it. The meeting just wasn't centered, even with one that's about, like, you know, rising ocean levels. Yeah. And
you know, as someone who's gone to, like, you know, a lot of film festivals, and particularly, like, you know, experimental film festivals, or when, like, you know, DV first started becoming a thing, or when, like, some new tool comes up, you see a lot of people experimenting with the kit and trying to figure out what they could do with it, and people getting really excited. That is definitely the case, you know, at the beginning of XR. And still is with a lot of XR stuff. Like, oh, hey, what can we do? What are the affordances? They're testing the bounds.
Right.
But there is this sort of sense of, like, well, this is all I need. Like the Wonka thing, right? You know, or the Willy's chocolate experience, right? It's really unfair to call it Wonka, because Wonka had nothing to do with it, right?
Right.
You know, the fact that, you know, on their website, they had clearly AI-generated advertising images for promotion that had nonsensical words on the poster, catagating, right? And, like, it's been fascinating to watch the internet do what the internet does best, which is spin dross into gold in the form of, like, riffing on these weird things that were part of this. But that is, like, what humans do. That's the humans counter hallucinating. That's the humans listening to the machine's hallucinations, listening to that glossolalia, and deciding there's meaning to it. Suddenly there's, you know, someone wants to make, you know, a movie about the unknown, you know, the creature that lives in the walls, that's the evil chocolate maker or whatever. And it's like, okay, right? Like, this is the thing that we do. It's this endless game of improv that our culture is. But that's almost like the accident that proves the rule, that there's nothing but, you know, nonsense chattering away at the heart of all this stuff. And there's this sense for me of, you're going to have people who want to cash in on excitement around the idea of what's the promise of an immersive experience? What's the promise of a Willy Wonka immersive experience, right? That you're going to get to feel like the kids who go to the chocolate factory feel without getting killed, right? Like, that is the express, you know, promise here, and that you're going to get some sweet treats as part of it, right? And lo and behold, like, that is what everyone who came there expected and did not get. And I think that happens particularly with this, we see people using AI promotional art all the time now. I think it's now becoming a big sign to everybody that you didn't try, right? So, like, it's kind of great. Like, someone slathers that on something and it's like, oh, that person's not trying. That's minimal effort. You couldn't be arsed to go on Fiverr and get someone to design your logo on Fiverr, which was, you know, the cheap out way 5 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. And for the record, some people I know have used Fiverr. I've been involved in events where people used Fiverr. I found out we use Fiverr afterwards. I was not entirely happy that we were using Fiverr, but that wasn't my part of the deal. It wasn't my job to control that part. But when it became time for me to control that part, we didn't use Fiverr. I'm just pointing that out. Pay people what they're worth when you can pay, and when you can't pay, be as nice as you possibly fucking can. Because we use a lot of volunteer labor here at NoPro. But give intellectual ownership as much as humanly possible when you have to do that. This idea that I'm going to have the machine hallucinate up a promotional or a concept art image, and then when to get it out there, even if what you're doing, I just wouldn't put it in front of people. I wouldn't put it in a pitch deck. I wouldn't put it in an ad. I might use it internally to drive, you know, questions or create, you know, riffing. You might piss off your artists you're working with by, like, saying, like, oh yeah, I had, you know, I went to Midjourney, I came with these things, like, this is what I'm kind of thinking. Can you riff off of that? Right? Like, that's a sure way to piss off an artist. You do that with a writer and they'll be like,
with like ad copy, and they'll be like, I want to put you in a wood chipper. I have to rewrite all this. And you think that I'm just editing, right? You know, they're not. But like, as a way again of like reflecting back, right? Trying to like see if you can't sketch, I'm not going to ding anyone for doing something like that. Right. I think that can be helpful to see something and to maybe help develop your vocabulary. Although I also want to say, we know now what this is doing between crypto and this, what this is doing to our energy demands and our energy infrastructure. And the fact that right now there's like reports out that like, if this continues, America's not going to have enough power, like electrical power, to keep up with the demand for people saying, hey, ChatGPT, can you write me a resume? Like, that could drive us into hurting the power grid, driving up the cost of energy. And guess what, everybody? When you drive up the cost of energy, you drive up the cost of production of everything. We want inflation to end? Stop fucking around with ChatGPT. Straight up. You want it over? Quit dicking around with energy costs. I wish I was being hyperbolic in the extreme. It doesn't, like, unless the information being fed to me is completely wrong, and in this day and age, given ChatGPT, it totally could be. But like, there are experts out there saying that we've got a real crisis on our hands, you know, in terms of the natural resources that are being fed into this for entirely ephemeral things,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I wish someone would do a big study that would show, okay, what is ChatGPT or Bitcoin cost us versus Discord, versus running X, versus cable television, right? Like, to get some real benchmarks so we could make some rational policy decisions about what's valued and valuable and who should be getting what tax breaks and how we should structure our society around this technology. But sadly, we don't live in that timeline.
Yeah.
But I long for the holodeck. I do. I really, really do. Right? It's why I like VR. It's why I like XR. It's why I like going to the void. It's why I was like, can I make this give me a photorealistic Shin Trump? You know, like, can I make it do that? Can I get my fantasy of watching, you know, like the rubble of Trump? I think my prompt was like the rubble of Trump Tower, Donald Trump, but Shin Godzilla, you know? And it got cinematic, you know, 4K. I think those were the words I said. And like, it coughed up something that was like, yeah, it's got it right. He's got a tail, but I did say Shin Godzilla. So like, let's go, man. You know, just these absurd fever dream stuff. But if you had told me that was like, oh yeah, by doing that, we have to burn a tree for you to like see this dumb image. Right. A small tree, but still, we got to burn we got to burn the equivalent of like a 3-foot Christmas tree. That's the carbon cost of what you just did. I would have been like, no.
Right.
Okay. That you had to burn, let me be less absurd, that I had to burn like a branch the size of my arm.
Yeah, a log. Let's say you had to burn a log. Yeah.
I had to burn a Yule log in order to do that. I was like, that's not worth a log.
No.
It's not worth a log. Is it worth a log? You know?
Well, I am less knowledgeable on the energy output or requirements, but I can tell you more about the LA Art Show. What, I guess since you weren't there, let's go back to the LA Art Show. Or, so I would say, what questions, since you weren't there, what questions do you have for me around other elements, other things that I saw, just questions that you have that I might be able to link some of the installations to? Or was there something else around Willy Wonka that besides, I mean, the promotional images were, that's the key.
Well, there's also the script, right?
That's right. The script. Yes. That they got the night before.
that was also clearly generated by a large language model.
Right? Yes.
And that was fun because it, you know, it had the crowd reaction in it. And it had the impossible. What was it? One point, the actor catches a bubble and then reveals a mote of light that then floats up into the sky. Everyone surprised and delighted. That was in the script. It was like, wow, ILM would love to be able to do that.
The script was, what was it? It was like 50 something pages, right? Did you read it? Did you read the whole thing?
No, I mean, even if everything that's going on in my family's life right now was not going on, there's no way in hell. Because again, like it'd be like trying to read 50 pages worth of, you know, like someone took a bun. It'd be like trying to read a transcript of the Oracle at Delphi when someone asked it a really inane question, right? Like, I don't need to put that in my brain. Mm-hmm. It is an ephemeral experience. It is not real poetry. It's not real meaning. Now, there are really funny things that emerge from it, and I'm glad other people did and have derived meaning from it, but it's the same thing as, you know, like, it's the act of someone sitting there and responding to the nonsense that has created the meaning, mm-hmm. which is the compelling thing down the road. Like, yes. If the energy imprint of this stuff, you know, what do artists do with these tools? What meaning do they derive from the chaos and the nonsense of this stuff that they can shape it, right? That's a really interesting question. And I guess to go to the LA Art Show about this, mm-hmm. did you see, particularly in terms of any of the installations or any of the digital type art, or maybe even beyond the LA Art Show, in terms of what you're seeing in terms of digital art, in terms of people playing with algorithms, do you see people using these tools in ways that do make interesting meaning?
Definitely a yes. And I've talked about Rafik Anadol, the Turkish artist who's based here in LA. I think if anything, like for people who are in LA, who went to Diverse Art LA and who've also seen his work, I think, again, it's not an apples to apples comparison, but I think that he has been very, very candid around, like, this is a tool. We start with like a data set around wind or weather patterns. He doesn't go into granular detail about what he's doing. He's an artist, but the process has a lot of input from him and his team. So they are molding this, what AI is generating, they then are really shaping. So, I think that's an example of AI that is being used in really interesting ways, but again, it's not just AI. I think that in terms of the LA Art Show and Diverse Art LA this year, I mean, I think we have multiple issues that we're still wrestling with. And so I want to be fair in how we're approaching this and talking about it. We're still running into, and I know we recently were talking about, and you had updated the definition for the NoPro glossary around how do we define what immersive is. And I tend to not be, I think that some sort of standardization, some sort of common understanding of what are we talking about is important. But I don't tend to kind of get too worked up if I feel like immersive is being used maybe a little inappropriately. Again, trying to afford some grace around all of these different art forms as they evolve. In this case, though, I really do want to push back. I think that there are calling an installation immersive when it truly is just a video projection. There's nothing wrong with installation art, video projection, multimedia. Great, we've been doing this for a long time. There's nothing inherently wrong with that, but calling it immersive when it isn't. I think that in one case, there was a part of the floor had kind of this vinyl overlay. It had a mirror effect. And so, sure, the reflections then on the floor from the video, that's a nice layer that adds a little bit more of a three-dimensionality to it. Great. But it's not immersive. And I felt like we ran into that a lot this year where I would not have called these immersive installations. So I do think there's a problem there. It's not just all on the AI side.
Would you have called it an environmental installation?
I really wouldn't have for, let's see, there's one that I would definitely apply that term to, but there was a lot of video projection onto a wall, which again, there's nothing wrong with that inherently, but that in and of itself is not immersive. I also found it interesting that one of the artists, I found an interview with her on YouTube, taken at LA Art Show. Who did this? I can probably pull it up really quickly, but I thought it was absolutely fascinating that she referred to her, let's see, do I have it? No, I don't. But it was, oh yes, I do. It was Ideate TV. And so they were at the show and I'd never heard of Ideate TV, but there's a couple of videos on YouTube from the LA Art Show. And this artist, Lale Mehran, she was actually talking about her installation, which I thought was really the most compelling piece. And she referred to it as interactive. And it wasn't interactive. It actually, there was a sign on this very interesting sculpture, this like kinetic sculpture, do not touch. It wasn't interactive, but it was responsive. So as people came into the room, this kinetic sculpture would adjust. Although what was interesting was I didn't know that. Again, kind of going back to like these layers of issues in experiential that are not just around AI. I read the wall text. And again, you don't want to just inundate people with text. I understand there's a balance there with that. But I think that's a really interesting experiential element that if no one is in the room, this sculpture is behaving a certain way. And when people come into the room, that changes. And so there is an impact. There is a sequencing. There's a chain of events. But I didn't even know that. And I thought that was such a key element to like understanding this sculpture. But I also
understand why she would call it
interactive.
Interactive because it was responsive. I mean, part of it is like how we're using the term of art. Like I might not call that interactive like you. I might call it responsive because there isn't a clear line for us to put agency on it. And indeed for me as a human being and to some degree in my role as curator, you know, of things and in my role as critic, I will try to reserve the term interactive for that which we can meaningfully change through our agency.
Right.
Even to the point where I'll call something immersive, but not interactive because we can't change it too much. We're meaningfully part of it, but we're not able to change it where it's a low agency situation. But someone who isn't from, you know, the same church as us might not use that word that way, but still be looking for how do I describe the art is responding. This kinetic sculpture can be influenced, even if it's just like a motion sensor sees, you know, someone go into the room. And so it goes from being moving left to right to moving up and down. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's what it's doing, but let's say that is literally the most simple interaction I can think of. And like, I mean, if you understand interactive to be the presence of the audience changes the behavior of the sculpture, then yeah, interactive.
And right? I think that would be, I would have let, and I don't mean to get to a point where we're like splitting hairs, but I think that it's interesting that wasn't clearly conveyed, because that's the other thing. Mm. If you don't know that, if you have no idea that your presence is somehow impacting this kinetic sculpture, again, how does that translate into how you receive it, how you interpret it, and again, how it lands for you, if you don't know that information, if that's not clearly conveyed.
Yeah.
So I think—
Was that something with that piece, if you did things, would it maybe modify its behavior? Or if like, did it change— obviously we're talking specifically about a piece that I have not seen and yeah. I don't know, but like, you know, as people came in or as people did things in the room, did the piece change its behavior? Like, was there a point where you might be able to sleuth out that there's a dynamic at work, or what did it seem to be very opaque from what you were able to observe?
I only gathered this through this interview. Mm. It wasn't included in the text either at the show or online. And I do think that—
And when you saw the piece, you didn't seem to notice it doing anything in response to anybody.
No. And so, and apparently it, what's interesting is that you wouldn't know. So even though I'm saying, oh, you know, I didn't know this information, it wasn't conveyed via written text. What's interesting is that the sculpture is not engaged in the same way if no one is in the room. So the minute that someone enters the room, it shifts. So it's kind of, you can't observe it without—
Wait, like Schrodinger's cat? How do the curators know? It's like, just trust me, when you're not here, it's doing something entirely different. Can we put a video camera? No. Because if it sees a video camera, it's like,
I know, we need like—
I'm going to build a few of these. That cost me no money whatsoever. Oh boy.
Like a Nest cam, you know, so we can watch it from the other room. So, I mean, I do think like it was, to me, even without all of this, it was a much more interesting sculpture just on its own. Even taking aside like all of the things that I am commenting on, I do think that it was more— I mean, it was kinetic, it was more active. This one focused much more on memory and human identity. AI was really not— it was just sort of alluded to. It was more metaphorical. There wasn't any direct AI engagement and so, or utilization. So, but I think that, yeah, it just was, and this was what I wanted to say earlier. I think it's fascinating because we do now have access to some of these tools and we're playing around with them and trying to figure out how do we want to work with these? And I said sort of at the top that there was a different AI installation that I thought actually was a much more compelling use of AI. And this was back, same Diverse Art LA at the LA Art Show. This was back in 2021. And I spoke about it on one of our review crew sessions around that time. And the name of the artist is Ana Marcos. And the title of the piece is Data Ergo Sum Reloaded. And the way this worked was, it was very spooky. And I think the idea of AI, it kind of raises issues around like, you know, when we don't have access to things, when it's really just our imagination and where that can take us and how powerful that can be. And sometimes having access to these tools can almost be problematic in terms of how it initially might sort of depress or suppress imagination. So this particular piece was two rooms. And the first room was an observation room. And you walked in and there were two mirrors on the wall. And so there's a camera behind the mirror. And there's a mark on the floor. And it tells you to stand there. And so you're standing in front of the mirror. Nothing else is happening. It's a dimly lit room. And I just kind of stood, there were instructions. And so I stood on the mark and I kind of looked in the mirror and just stood there for a moment. I mean, maybe 20 seconds, if that. And then I backed up and there was this, I think the way I described it for review crew was for Portal fans, I'm going to go a little further back here. It sounds like the voice that would say, "Are you still there?" It was this very mechanical, computerized voice. And it wound up being this, it was sort of like it was longing to interact with somebody. So if you weren't standing on the mark, even though when you're standing on the mark, there's no voice, there's no instruction. It's not like you're having a conversation with this device or with this, you know, kind of embodied AI. It But then when you stepped off the mark, if you stayed in the room, it kind of came to life. And I laughed out loud. I had no idea that there was even going to be any sort of audio. I didn't realize that there would be anything beyond just, you're standing on the mark. And then in the next room is where the AI comes more visually into play. The recording of a person standing on the mark. So I go, there's a projection of me, and it's up on the wall, again, dim room. And then it was all these fake biometrics, like this kind of capture of different things around, like, kind of, I think, you know, vitamin levels and heart rate.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, you talking about this.
Also, like, emotions and calculated, like, you know, certain emotions that I was feeling. And then to sort of see, like, there wasn't this incredibly sophisticated presentation, but just that combination and the bizarre, like, little interaction in the observation room where I was there, I was in the room, but the sensors didn't have me on the mark. And so there were layers to it that felt, I think, it felt much larger and much scarier, much more like disconcerting. And it just felt very intentional of, you know, you can
pull. It sounds like there was some really good experience design.
There was good, right? Experience design. There's all kinds of the, you know, psychological things that you could sort of dive into around, like, just even being in the room and looking at yourself in a mirror. And what is that even, what headspace does that put you into? And I think even the fact that there were two, I didn't hang out there for a couple hours, but I never saw two people in that room together. And so even knowing that there is a second spot that someone else could come in, they could stand on the mark next to me and look into the second mirror. There were a number of things that I just kind of felt like, how often do they have two people come in, whether they're together, whether they're strangers, the dynamics of the space, how it was designed, and the fact that then you did go into a separate room to see your kind of your projection and this, you know, biometric and sort of, you know, emotional breakdown.
Yeah.
Was fascinating. And that was in 2021. And that felt like a much more layered, resonant, the messaging around that felt much kind of starker.
Yeah. But also, like, that's also, you know, 2021, the glut of Van Gogh's, the glut of, you know, it's, projection, you know, projection shows are immersive. None of that's happened, or very little of that's happened, right? Like, the original thing that was in France is up, and like the Emily in Paris show has happened. But like that in terms of being a sweeping fad, you know, crossing the nation and taking the word immersive, that is just about to happen or just starting to break out. You don't have everyone thinking that they found a technical solve. You know, that you don't have everyone racing yet to NFTs, thinking that that's going to be the thing that's going to be the savior of the digital art market or the creator of the digital art market before it gets, you know, flooded by, you know, cheap mass produced junk. And having to sit there and have, you know, discussions where you're explaining, like, oh no, see, this person's a digital artist and like da 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 da. And it's like, yeah, but like, look at my monkeys, right? You know, like, not all of that is sort of just about to break out. And now we're past all that. And there's probably some degree of fatigue by some of the artists, but then other folks who, you know, it doesn't surprise me that there's a bunch of stuff that's like, oh, we've put a bunch of projections all over a room. It's immersive because that's been marketed to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the reasons why you mentioned that we like recently revised the definition. And I don't know if I've actually read the new definition on the show yet. So I called it up. I'm going to read the new definition. Maybe I have, I just don't remember. My memory is Swiss cheese right now. I also keep on reciting this to people left and right. So maybe I haven't done the show. So our most recent update goes like this. The top part of it, there's an expanded, I won't do the expanded. Immersive. that which meaningfully puts the artist on the same level as the primary action in a story slash environment, usually physically and or narratively. For example, the audience is part of the world in an immersive piece, even if it is mainly as a physical obstacle. And that is like an exceptionally broad, you know, definition intentionally, with the exception of the word meaningfully.
Yeah.
Which is the innovation to this edition of it, because that was the thing that was starting to strike me as the missing component for so much of this, which is you can have all the elements, you can check all the technical boxes by putting a bunch of projections around people and saying, see, it's immersive. There isn't a single surface in here that isn't surrounding the people. But if there is no meaning to that act of surrounding, if nothing's being communicated through the actual act of surrounding people with the images, then one, you've wasted time and money surrounding people with these images. And two, it's not immersive because that's the spark that takes, you know, it's like a marionette unoperated is just a doll. It takes the act of picking up the control rods and the act of the performer to make that puppet come to life, to create a performance, to create this alternate reality where that hunk of wood is the simulacrum of a real boy. And without that spark, without that act of trying to communicate something more than the sum of its parts, it's just a tech demo.
Right. And that there was an installation when you said, like, you know, kind of environmental installation. I guess I was thinking of a couple. There was one that would, I think, previously have fallen under the immersive umbrella, because technically, you went to a small room and there's projections everywhere. And this was the one that I had said, oh, there's the rendering on site, on the website. Mm. And again, to be fair, I don't know that that rendering, I'm not suggesting that, it's unclear if that was AI generated imagery. But there was a sculpture, a small sculpture in the center of the room. And then there's just projections around you. It was very frustrating because, again, the messaging, in that case, there was loads of text outside the room, and it just, I mean, and as a writer, like, I feel comfortable saying this, you can't write your way out of the poor design of the physical installation. There can be all kinds of beautiful descriptions around what this is trying to convey. But in this case, the reality was it was a cube. You stepped inside. Again, there was kind of a vinyl on the floor, mirror effect, and there's projections all around. And there was just, I was just really surprised by what this was delivering, or in this case, not delivering. It was kind of blue. You know, this is about water. And the sculpture in the center was a kind of like a teardrop shaped sculpture.
I mean, I think we also have to, it's kind of really interesting because, like, you know, there was an article, I haven't gotten all the way through it, but there was an article, I think, circulating on Blue Loop this week about basically there not being, you know, a real discipline of like criticism of like immersive art pieces, right? That's sort of like the summation of it. It was bumping around on LinkedIn, everyone's least favorite social media service, the one we're all on because we feel like we have to be. But the the thing I keep on kind of coming back to, and with what you're describing too of this piece, and I think that the thing everyone kind of, it's like no one wants to claim the bad immersive work as immersive, but I do. I want to say there's bad immersive. It's like this was trying. It didn't do it.
Right.
It didn't succeed in getting the spark. You know, it's like you go to like a bad movie and it's like they used cameras. There's lights, there's sound, people are talking, but it's not good dialogue and the characters don't make sense, but you can't deny that it was using the tools of the medium. It's just a bad movie. There's bad immersive. And what is it, the 80-20 rule? 80% of everything is crap, right? Like, think of the sum total, think of the things you love. Right? Let's all take a moment here, podcast listeners. Think of the thing. Think of a medium. Think of a movie or a TV show or a play, maybe a song. Think about your absolute favorite one, right? Like the thing that if it got erased from existence, pick something. Pick something from one of these media categories. That if it got, not immersive. I don't want you to do immersive. Just think, if it got erased from existence, how bad life would be without it. Now remind yourself, there's about 10,000 pieces of work that will never begin to hope to touch the power and the glory of that song or movie. They are literally just god-awful artistic belches that fill up so much of the world. And there's so little immersive art that it doesn't surprise me that we've got a lot of belches out there, and finding the true songs is harder and maybe exasperating because it's as a self-contained, as a self-conceptualized discipline, this thing is still trying to figure out what it is. But I love the bad stuff because at least it means we have a field.
It does. And I'd like to talk about the bad stuff in terms of also, I wonder what is happening in terms on the backside of things, like what is happening within Diverse Art LA and the LA Art Show. Is there, what's happening on the funding side? And because I wish we could have more open transparency around these different elements. Like, I don't know, I'm being very critical about the programming this year. And while I do stand behind that, I also don't know what else is in play. And it, to me, it feels like based on past, because I don't think it's just a programming issue that, okay, this year didn't quite land. I really feel like there has been an overall decline in the quality of the work. And some of that may be around timelines. And again, how much funding is there? They're working with different cultural institutions. I mean, that's part of Diverse Art LA's allure. And so I'm not quite sure how this all fits together and what the financial model is. But to me, it feels like it is becoming just less financially supported. Now, that is more of a hunch. That may be completely inaccurate. But I think talking about the bad stuff also, so we can talk about the different models and where we need to approach funding differently, or, I mean, these are big topics. So, but I think that that's a part of the conversation too, because I don't know, have they had their funding cut by a huge degree? And is that a key part of the problem?
I mean, making any cultural or work of any way, shape or form, very, very, very difficult in the society we have right now in terms of what the demands are. I mean, you know, look, you had Cord Jefferson, you know, who wrote, who won what, best original screenplay or best adapted, right, for American Fiction,
Right.
Sorry, I can't remember. I think it was the Best Adapted. Sorry. I didn't watch the Oscars. I just watched the I'm Just Ken part like five times, and then the Billie Eilish part, and then the part where John Cena was naked, and then the part where, like, you know, Schwarzenegger and DeVito were, like, you know, mugging on Michael Keaton. Just the good parts. Whatever. I was like, oh, you travel, but so people are going to play. I was like, I don't care. Gosling impressed. Very impressed, Gosling. I've watched that three times now. That was the most joyous thing I've ever seen at the Academy Awards. Incredible. Anyway, the point being, Cord Jefferson was talking about, you know, I know this is a paraphrase. Like, I know this is an industry that is, you know, risk averse, but basically saying, what if instead of trying to make one $200 million movie, you made, you know, $102 million movies, or like $10-20 million movies. Like, why don't you spread it around and get some creativity going on? And that's the way things should be. And there's just so much of the incentives in this society, this culture, that make that not what people are doing. I find myself getting increasingly frustrated with the fact that you kind of have to just working at something, just working hard, just putting in the hours, the years, is increasingly not enough anymore. You got to walk in with capital. We're a capitalist society. You got to walk in with capital already in hand in order to have real agency in this culture. Or you're sort of confined to a level of hustle that is guaranteed to burn you out. And that's true whether you're a weird little blogger or you're Mr. Beast. That guy is clearly headed for an absolute breakdown at some point, because he literally, if someone says, I know that if I spend an hour with my girlfriend on a date, I'm losing $100,000. That's not a healthy way to think of life. And that guy supports an entire small town that he grew up in, right? Like, I have a fair amount of respect for that dude. I used to not have a lot of respect for Sydney Sweeney, if only because, like, every time I turned around on my Instagram, like, she was selling, like, you know, some coconut water thing. I was like, why are these ads for this coconut water, like, coming from this actress who's in all these movies and in these TV shows? And then it's like, yo, she's on 24-hour hustle because she can't say no to a single job. She's just, you know, from Spokane or some shit, right? She's not like, you know, Dakota Johnson, who's Hollywood royalty, who can go on a press tour and just be like, F all y'all. Like, I'm gonna smack talk this movie I was in, because what are you gonna do? Make me not be Don Johnson's daughter? Impossible, mm-hmm. Right? Like, you know, I gotta say, Dakota's actually a pretty good actress too. So, you know, like, sardonic as hell. Like, she's very, very funny. Someone give her a comedy. But, like, you know, like, I could watch her smack talk things all day long. It's really great. But, you know, I have respect for the people who are on the constant hustle grind. I don't have that kind of energy. I'm too old, and I'm too sad. And I've chosen the nichest niche humanly possible to occupy. But, you know, knowing that if you don't constantly stay in motion in this culture, you don't get to play around with the new thing, or more frightening, and one of the reasons why we see the cycles around NFTs, around large language models, is that you have to constantly try and ride the crest and the wave of whatever's hot and whatever the dumb money thinks is worthwhile in order for you to extract a living from. Well, and I have respect for the people who hustle on that level too, but it doesn't necessarily lead to, like, it rarely leads to good art. So when it does lead to good art, I'm always very impressed when someone's like, wow, you've made something compelling out of the thing that is the current, the hustle du jour. Bra fucking vo.
And I think, like, my sort of, I think, final thoughts on the LA Art Show with how it relates to what you just said is that I would be really curious to see what their attendance numbers have been. Now, obviously, we have major impact with COVID, of course, over the last several years, but I feel like they've actually just continued to pull back on the more experiential parts of this. And I find that really fascinating. Is it more about having, you know, more booths where they can have more galleries and sell more works? They did have this year a Beyond the Streets gift shop, which was, I think, something that might be kind of more of interest for some people, might be something that's more accessible financially. But they used to have, years ago, there was a section called Little Utopia. And this was much more kind of dynamic art. It was, I mean, some of it was just kind of wild sculptures. I'm not saying that it was these, you know, mirrored infinity rooms or things like that. But I remember there being just such just crowds of people trying to get, it would take up one entire aisle. And this is at the LA Convention Center, which is, I think that they list on their website, it's 200,000 square feet. So it's massive. And I just find it really interesting around, there's room and there are ways to have those experiential touch points, not just around these particular installations that are in Diverse Art LA, but I just feel like it has almost sort of receded back more and more into a traditional art fair model. And the things that I personally found that made it the most interesting and the most special, there was even when it was the same, it was 2021. And I think I mentioned it in my capsule review or on that review crew segment. There was an artist who made this little tunnel at her booth. So you just sort of stepped like through this little tunnel. And even that in and of itself, it felt like this little world. And she had, you know, I mean, it wasn't like it was not a lot of space. She used lighting, but it worked well with her art. And it was a delightful little moment to come around. You're in a different booth and then you see this strange little tunnel, and where does that take you? And so I find it fascinating that it just feels like it is reverting further and further back to traditional art fair model, and these moments and these areas and these installations that I think really made it more interesting, it seems to be getting watered down. And I don't know, it seems counter to what we're seeing with a lot of what's happening in the industry. And it feels like they're kind of going against the grain in a way that I would wager isn't, I can't imagine. It was actually, and it may have just been the time of day that I went and the particular day. It runs Thursday through Sunday. It's 4 full days, but it was not nearly as busy as it had been in past years. So I'm just confused as to like where they're headed in with their programming and the design of the fair overall, not just Diverse Art LA.
Yeah. Well, and like things that I wish we had a budget for, right? Like the ideal version of No Presidium that has like sponsors and crap, like we would send you and more people out to go to more art shows to try and see what the lay of the land for how much installation work was happening, or we'd pull in the stats, try and figure out, you know, what the attendance spikes for these things were, in part because you're right in terms of the trends outside of the art show world, right? You know, you go to the music festivals and the installation art is getting more complex, more performance friendly, more integrative. It's late. You know, they're integrating more performance and art together, right? There's a conversation happening at these things. You know, go watch a bunch of videos about Electric Forest, right? And then get, you know, maybe massively jealous, you know, unless you really don't like jam bands, in which case you'll be fine. I'm not a big jam band person, so mostly I'm fine, but I am jealous of all the other stuff. And then, sorry if you like jam bands, you know, part of it's that this stuff costs when done. I mean, one thing I'm thinking about here is like, maybe it's just that people have become so used to the act of installation that maybe everyone is afraid to do something that isn't all that technologically complex or that doesn't really go for it. Or, you know, maybe the reason why there's so many projection things is that people think that that is now the solve, right? But they aren't executing at the level of, say, a moment factory or a team lab,
right?
Which requires a lot of craft, like a high level of craft that there's only a handful of shops on the planet that are doing. I don't know. Like, what's the one in Cincinnati? Oh, are they doing it again? Did they do it last year? I can't remember. No, I'm blanking. Blink.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Blink. And like that, there's a lot of digital art, a lot of, you know, a lot of projectors happen there, you know, and it's like big and outdoors and all this outdoor stuff, right? Or what was that thing you went to a couple of years ago that was here in LA and a couple of pieces I think went to Blink? What was that called that was running around like, and they were doing projections like in parking lots?
Yeah, you're thinking of Luminex.
Yeah,
no, that's Luminex. It is coming back. So that is by a local, an LA company called Now Art. And this is completely open to the public. It's out in public spaces. These are large scale projections, buildings. There are some live performances that get worked in, but they were running annually for one night only. I think that in 2022, they did two nights. They expanded. Cool. And it's in downtown LA. And then there was a notification that was sent out and that they were moving to sort of a biennial schedule. Yeah. And it sounded like part of that was also to try to expand it. Again, I think not just around adding a night or really looking to get community involvement. And I do think that it's wonderful to go to downtown LA and people are outside and walking around, and it has a very different vibe, and it really does feel there's a different energetic quality. And I think we have, you know, a lot of these different like outdoor light festivals, they do that. They really do bring people together. They have a very specific community spark. But yeah, Luminex, I mean, it has artists like Rafik Anadol, Nancy Baker Cahill. And so I believe that is coming back this year. It had been in October for the previous years. So I don't know if they're planning to do that in October of this year, but it's certainly something that I will look for.
That's one I really want us to keep our eyes peeled for. And it makes sense to move to a biennial to try and get more people involved. And there's also just the difficulty of making work in LA and pulling permits for things and the constant shifting nature of the bureaucracy here and trying to chart the course. So it doesn't surprise me that there's, you know, some shuffling around to try and make it land. But there's definitely a lot of action, and there's pieces, and we are always doing what we can to get those pieces out there. And maybe just a little call here for everybody before we go off the air, for whatever edition this one is. This will definitely be a standalone. It could be an hour, like an hour and 15, is just, if you see this stuff in your neck of the woods, or you know about something coming up, please, please, please let us know. Let the makers of it, if you know them, let them know that we exist, that we're trying to get the word out there, that we're trying to like help drive people to catching these kind of festivals, these kind of events, going to installation art. It is a thing we truly love here and want more people to explore, just straight up. That's a big, big joy for us.
Yep.
All right. On that note, Laura, always a pleasure. I don't know when we're dropping this one, but I'll be happy when everyone gets to hear us rant and rave.
Likewise.
Once again, I want to thank Laura for being our guest on the show this week. Check out her writing at No Proscenium, of course, and in some other publications here and there. And when she's got some stuff, we will link to it on our socials. We got to get good on the socials again for No Pro. I got to figure out where our, other than the Discord, I got to figure out where like our social media home is going to be, like our forward facing. I mean, there's the Facebook, but you know, anyway, that's the whole thing. Look, you've heard way too much of me already, but I wanted to note a couple of things. We have a whole bunch of episodes either in the can or coming up, about to be recorded. We've got a wonderful interview with artist Robert Karimi, which I was super stoked to do after I got to meet him at Worlds in Play this year. Patrick has recorded an episode with the creative team behind Port of Entry in Chicago. I've got a call set up with the folks at Darkfield to talk about their latest arcade. I'm visiting Rory Mitchell's office to check out the tent. And we are lining up a conversation with the folks at Agog. All of that is coming up in the next few weeks. So, you know, it's XR, it is performance, it is things that defy description. That is the No Pro way. I'm very excited about the run of episodes we have coming up, and hopefully you are as well. All right, it's been a long one. Let's get out of here the only way we know how, which is the associate producer of this podcast is Parker Sella. Music for No Proscenium is by Chris Porter of the Speakeasy Society and Solar the Podcast. Special thanks to Siobhan O'Loughlin for voicing our intro. And this thing is written, edited, hosted, talked all over, produced, talked all over again, and mixed by yours truly. I'm Noah Nelson. And until next time, I'll see you at the show.